Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show, hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, good day. It's John Beener. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Inspiration 316. We got a unique show. We share the good news of Jesus Christ, everyday miracles happening in people's lives. We take the bad news and tell you the good part of what happens, how God changes things, circumstance, situation. Today, we have a unique show. It's all about Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow has been called one of the most influential Christian men since Billy Graham, not in his league, obviously, but up-and-coming young man. I think he's still not even in his 30s yet, but he has a great Christian testimony, witness, guts to tell people about it. His father, Bob Tebow, has had the ministry for many years out of the Philippines, and they bring millions of people to Christ to support them financially. They're headquartered here in Jacksonville. Tim was raised here in Jacksonville, homeschooled by his mom. When his mom got pregnant, she was 37 years old, and they talked about the fact that he may should be aborted because there's a good chance he's not going to be normal and all that kind of stuff. His mother said, no way, we're having this child, and God is going to do the healing if that's necessary. And this Bob, Tebow had prayed that his son would be a pastor, a teacher, an evangelist. Well, he's been that already, even though he's been a heck of a good football player. Now he's into baseball. So listen, we got a series of these stories with Tim Tebow. This first one's on The View, and then we've got one with Harry Connick. Then we've got one about, parents telling the full story from a focus on the family. Then we've got Prison Fellowship, where Tim's talking there, and they're talking about the incredible story of John 3:16, the witness there, and then an interview with Skip Bayless, the guy on ESPN. It's a talk show host himself out of Dallas. But interesting stuff, good angles and insights to Tim Tebow and Christ, and what God is doing in his life and through other people that have been connected with him. Listen to this first one about baseball with The View. These ladies are trying to really go at it with him. Listen to what he has to say.
You're apparently playing baseball again. You're in the minor league system with the Mets. We were talking backstage. Okay, a couple of New York Mets fans. And what a lot of people don't know, you played high school baseball through your junior year. It was actually your first love.
It really was my first love. And honestly, I thought most of my life that I was going to be a baseball player and probably go pro out of high school. And my dad really wanted me to do that, but my mom wanted me to get an education. And so when you're a Southern boy, you listen to mom.
Boys need to listen to their mamas, too.
That's true.
So what made you decide? I know that, you know, you had a pretty rocky NFL career, but what made you decide to go back to baseball? And did you ever feel like maybe you should have done that to begin with?
Well, I don't know about that. I don't really look back with regret because I think everything happens for a reason. But it was something that I loved, and it never really got too far away from my heart. And so when I had the opportunity and a couple people took a look at me and thought there was a chance, I wanted to go pursue it because I love it. And I also really enjoy pursuing things that are on my heart.
Good for you. Now, before signing this fall with the Mets, you hadn't played baseball in 11 years?
Yeah, took a little time off.
Sometimes I pick up a bat and get recruited to a team. I mean, that's like a big deal. Was it like stepping back in time to do this?
A little bit, yeah, and it was a big adjustment. Obviously, when you haven't done it for 11 years, it takes a little while to get adjusted and to get comfortable. But
were you rusty at all?
Certain parts of the game, yeah, I had to get adjusted, but it's been so much fun. And I think when you get a chance to go pursue what you're passionate about, what you love, I mean, you're living the dream every day, and that's such a blessing to do.
Well, I have to ask you, I mean, you are a Heisman Trophy winner. Have you really hung up your football jersey for good?
I am totally pursuing baseball, and I am all in on baseball, looking forward to spring training.
So we're never gonna see you in a jersey again, football jersey?
Hopefully you'll see me in a New York Mets jersey.
All right. we know that your faith is very important to you, and I want to ask you about a post-game video that has gone viral. Okay. You stopped to comfort and pray over a fan who had a seizure. Some witnesses called your prayer a miracle. Can you take us back through that moment, and what happened?
Well, that was right after my first game in the Arizona Fall League, and I was signing autographs, and there were a couple hundred people down the line, and I just passed Brandon, and then I looked back, and I saw him starting to go to the ground, and he started to go into a seizure, and then he went unconscious, and so it was honestly a little bit frustrating because when it started to happen, there were so many people that the first things they wanted to do was grab their phone and put this on Instagram. It's like, at a moment of need when someone's hurting, let's not try to get more followers, let's try to help somebody.
Right.
And for me, I didn't want to do it for the cameras. That's why I just put my hand on his thigh and started to pray. And about 10 seconds later, he woke up, and then we had probably 20 minutes of talking. And we didn't always get along because he's a Georgia Bulldog fan, so I had to give him a hard time about that.
But
he's doing really well, and I stay in touch with him. Yeah, we were just texting a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know, though, is it... some people are saying that your laying of your hands on him, that was a miracle, the miracle of prayer. What do you say to those
people? I don't think it had anything to do with me. I think that that God has a bigger plan for everybody, and God's in control. I'm not in control of anything.
We're getting a lot of amens from the audience. Speaking of, you know, God's bigger plan for you, I want to talk about your book, Shaken. It's a great book, but you open up about being cut. You were cut by, I think, three NFL teams. You had to really deal.
Thanks for bringing that up.
I'm sorry. Well, you wrote about it, Tim. But, you know, you're talking about dealing with rejection. And how did you really reconcile? Like, you felt God wanted you to go into the NFL, but it didn't work out. And that's what this book is about. So how did you cope with all of that?
I think everything happens for a reason. And I think, honestly, the highs that I've been able to experience in my life are awesome. National championships and playoffs in the NFL, yeah, and a Heisman Trophy and all these things are awesome. But very few people can relate to that. But most people can relate to having a lot of people say you're not good enough, or having the world say and try to define you in certain ways. But the good thing is that when we get knocked down, when it's a bad relationship, when we get cut from our team, when we get lose our job, that the world doesn't get to define us, because the God of this universe already did.
Right. I love that you say, you know, it's such a good book because it makes you ask the question, who are you when life is steady, but who are you when the storm comes? Mm-hmm. And it's such a profound question that all of us need to be able to answer.
Yeah. Before we go on a much lighter note, you're famous for T-bowing. I feel like maybe people ran with something you did and made it. But we have something, a new version.
Okay.
Let us walk around here. It's called T-balling.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
So what we're going to do is we want to show you this, and you're going to pick between the three versions of what you think looks bad.
Okay.
This is Brian Tata. He's a big fan, by the way.
Brian.
Thank you. I appreciated that. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Do it. Ready? Sunny,
yeah,
I showed
I like
you.
It.
Okay, wait, wait, wait. No, it's not yet. Get
wait,
down
wait.
Here.
No, this is. See, I'm.
Am I the only T-baller
right here? I've got a skirt on.
She's a skirt.
Who do you think won? Who's doing it the best?
A T-ball. Come on,
it's
fire.
It's a T-ball, not a T-ball.
It's a T-ball now.
She just hit me.
T-ball.
Yeah!
Way
to go. Thank you. Everybody, our big thanks to Tim Tebow. His new book, Shaken, Discovering Your True Identity in the Midst of Life Storms. It is in stores now. And members of our audience, you are going home with a copy.
Okay, how about that? Is that wild? That's not the normal ladies on The View, but obviously these ladies were fans of his. But what if they did T-bowing, really, is where he gets on his knee and he puts his, his elbow on his knee as well, and his head, and he kind of like he's thinking, but he's actually praying. And that's so they're kind of coming up with a version with a baseball and a glove and that kind of stuff now that he's in baseball. But anyway. Kind of cute, kind of funny, kind of crazy. Anyway, Tim Tebow, here's an interview with Henry Connick, the singer. He also was famous on American Idol. He is a sharp guy, but listen to the honest interview with Harry Connick. See what he has to say.
I recently sat down with my good friend Tim Tebow for a follow-up conversation on the role faith plays in his life. When he visited us last fall, he told us about a special day centered on John 3:16. The clip of Tim's John 3:16 story received an overwhelming social media response. We were completely blown away. It reached over 50 million people and has been viewed over 26 million times on our Facebook page. What I found interesting was that so many of the comments were thanking me for allowing Tim to talk about his faith on national television. I couldn't get over why people were thanking me for something I thought would be perfectly normal. Take a look at our recent conversation about all of this.
Here's what's fascinating to me. On social media, when you were on my show and you told that story, which you wrote about beautifully in your book, Shaken, you told the story on the air, and it was one of the most overwhelming responses on social media that I've ever seen. Over 50 million people were reached. Can you remind everybody about the John 3:16 story? People can't seem to get enough of this story.
Well, it was a verse that I wore under my eyes in the national championship game when I was in college. And long story short, 94 million people Googled it that night. And then exactly 3 years later, playing the first round of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs, I threw for 316 yards. And my yards per completion were 31.6. And yards per rush were 3.16. Time of possession was 31.6. And the ratings of the night were 31.6, and during the game, 90 million people Googled John 3:16, and it was the number one trending thing on all the social media platforms, and it was just amazing to see what God did with just a verse that I put under my eyes.
What are your thoughts about speaking about your faith on a nationally syndicated television show?
Well, I think it's important to speak about things that we're passionate about and we love. And I think it's important, if we are convicted about something, to share it, to not share it into condescending or putting anybody down if they believe something different, but it's in sharing it in a way of love, in a way of hope, in a way of faith, to support people, to help people, to love people. And ultimately, the Christian faith is about loving people. It's about loving Jesus first, and it's about loving people second. And there's a lot of people that, you know, we can get into theology and they'll tell you a lot of different things about it and all these sort of things, but when you break it down, it comes down to those two things, love. It comes down to loving Jesus and loving people, and that's what we're trying to do.
Why isn't it the norm to be able to talk about your faith?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, but I do think the one thing that was probably encouraging for a lot of people is just how big the God that we serve really is. You know, I didn't do anything special in that story. I really didn't do anything. I put a little verse under my eyes, and God did something special through it. And the God that we serve is a big God, and sometimes I think we put him in this little tiny box, and we go see him on Sunday mornings, or maybe at a devotional or something like that, or it's something we put on our Instagram, #blessed. And then when you're able to see a story about how an average person and myself just puts a verse under your eyes, but you know, God does something special with it. It's like, no, we serve a really big God. We serve a God that does miracles. We serve the God that loves people, that gave his son for us. And that's what's pretty special. And I think that kind of is something that it reminds me of.
You know, Tim calls himself average. He says he's an average guy. I can tell you firsthand, Tim Tebow is not an average guy. No matter what you happen to believe, Tim Tebow is an extraordinary guy. And in his book, Shaken, he opens up about his religious journey. Tim spent the early years of his life in the Philippines, and he travels back often for philanthropic work. I was shaken by one particular story in the book. It was about a little boy named Sherwin, who Tim met in a very remote village in the Philippines. This encounter with Sherwin changed his life. Take a look at this.
Tell us about Sherwin. I want to know about Sherwin.
Well, Sherwin impacted my life probably more than any other kid that I've probably ever met. And I've met a lot of special kids, but when I was 15 years old, I was in the Philippines, and the Philippines is made up of thousands of islands, and we were in a very remote island. We realized very quickly it was the first time this village had ever seen visitors in the history of their village.
Wow.
And so they're freaking out. They can't believe they have Americans visiting them. They're touching our face, touching our skin, especially the girls with blonde hair. They can't believe it, you know, because they've never seen blonde hair before. And so we gather everybody at the local high school, and we're there to share the good good news of Jesus with them. And it's my turn to share. And as I'm beginning to share, I see three boys in the back right corner turn and walk away. And then after I finished speaking, I did whatever I could do to get away from everybody to go see these three boys because they're in my head and my heart. And finally, I get around to the back of the school and I see one of the boys crawl out of a bamboo hut about 200 yards away. The boy crawls in and I crawl in after him and I see the other two boys there in the bamboo hut. One of them's laying on his bamboo cot and I see his legs and I notice that his legs were on backwards. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And so I was getting emotional, but I was fighting back tears. And I'm talking to these three boys and I just had to ask though, why did you leave? You know, when everybody's fighting to see the Americans, why would you leave? And the boy lying on the cot, his name's Sherwin, and he looked at me and he said, our principal really wanted to impress the Americans. And she told me that I am not very impressive. And my heart was just breaking because that's the person we're supposed to be serving. That's the person we're supposed to be loving. So I pick him up and all the Filipinos and all the Americans are out there and we walk out of the bamboo hut and I realize that all of them looked at Sherwin as cursed because he was born with his feet on backwards. But you could see every step that I took carrying Sherwin, the narrative started to change in their heads and they're thinking, oh, this message of good news, of love that you just told us, it applies to him. And so every step I would take, they would get closer and closer and finally they would, you know, touch me and him. But before they thought if you touched him, you would be cursed. Mm-hmm. So I got on my knees and I prayed with these three young boys and I told Sherwin, I said, Sherwin, I can't wait to see you in heaven. And he looked at me and said, Kuya Timmy, which means brother, I can't wait to run with you in heaven. Mm-hmm. And this boy has never walked a day in his life. And, you know, I'm just so thankful that I got to meet Sherwin and his two friends. And when no one else wanted to touch Sherwin, when no one else wanted to be around him, his two friends would not leave him.
It's a really beautiful story. Tim, we're so impressed by you and we're so inspired by you. Your words just make us all feel a little bit better. And it reminds us that we all are loved and we all are worth something. Every one of us.
Again, that's Tim Tebow's story with Harry Connick Jr. and a great piano player, singer. Great entertainers. Got a talk show now, I guess it is. And so Tim Tebow's who we're featuring again. His dad and mom, his dad, Bob Tebow, ministry from the Philippines from probably 30 years or so. They've done great things. They're here locally in Jacksonville area. Again, his mom and dad had to face the whole issue about abortion. Here's a story interview with Focus on the Family, and I'm trying to remember the gentleman who took over for Jim Dobson. But anyway, he's doing the interviewing with them, listening to some of their story.
Well, it started in the summer of 1986 when I was out in the bottom of Mindanao. Mindanao is the large southern island in the Philippines, and I was out preaching in the mountains. I was weeping
over the loss of millions of babies in America that were never given a chance.
And I prayed and said, God, if you want another preacher in this world, you give me Timmy. And this was before he was conceived. And I'll raise him to be a preacher. And so I went home and the next morning at breakfast shared with my family my prayer that I'd begun. And everybody joined in and we started praying by name for God to give us Timmy.
I was considered high risk. I was 37. We lived in an area that didn't have great medical care at the time, and we had four healthy children, and so people questioned us, and yet we really believed that we needed to pray for Timmy, and so I did conceive, and we were very excited that I became pregnant with Timmy, and we went to see the doctor there in the town that we lived in. She said it wasn't a baby at all. He was a mass of fetal tissue, and that I needed to abort him immediately if I were going to save my life. And so...
Said it was a tumor.
Said it was a tumor. We didn't really have to make a decision at that time. We had made it years previous because we were determined to trust the Lord with the children that he would give us. And if God called me to give up my life, then he would take care of my family. And so we just trusted him, and I didn't have any more medical care at that time or any time until we moved to Manila, the capital of the Philippines, at the very end of my pregnancy. And God did so many things along the way. I continued to think that I would lose him almost on a daily basis because I had such a difficult pregnancy. And yet we had a peace at the same time. So we were experiencing physical problems, but we had God's peace. Mm-hmm. And many people were praying for us, many people in the States. And I can remember one time when I'd been given some medicine to take for amoeba. And I had taken one pill. I was reading with my oldest daughter the book of Timothy, where we chose the name for our Timothy. And I just felt compelled that I needed to go and read about the medicine. And when I did, I realized that it said on the label could cause severe birth defects. And so I threw it away and had to deal with those physical issues as well. And yet I saw that as another sign from the hand of God that he was protecting Timmy in the womb, gave us the wisdom. And God did spare Timmy. Time after time, I thought that I had lost him, and then only to discover I continued to be pregnant. So God was very gracious, and he was delivered in a Manila hospital. And I was somewhat malnourished, but he's made up for it in time. So, and when the doctor delivered him, Bobby, you were right there.
There was a great big clump of blood that came out where the placenta wasn't properly attached, basically for the whole 9 months and completely. And so, you know, he was a miracle baby.
Absolutely, and also Timmy was healthy.
He was healthy. And we were just so grateful, and we have reminded him countless times that God has a special plan for him. He spared him in the womb, and he spared him since. Spared him laying on the field there at the University of Kentucky, and he spared him for a reason. Of course, we tell that to our other children, too, because God has a plan for each of them.
Sure.
But I think that has marked Timmy's life. He is very aware of his beginnings and how God did spare him in the womb.
God's hand was on Tim right from the beginning, if not
exactly.
Before.
Exactly.
And it is quite astonishing to see how the Lord has used him all the way through.
I was prepared in all his life. I've talked to him about being a preacher. I've told him that sometime God will call him to preach. In the meantime, he's become a quarterback. I prayed for a preacher, and God gave me a quarterback. So
but he's doing it, isn't he?
He is preaching. He is preaching. And that's his goal. I mean, he takes very seriously his accountability before all those, you know, the little kids that look up to him. And we get so many emails and notes and letters and calls. They follow him. They want to grow up to be like him. And parents are grateful because they have a role model for their children. We had a great role model for our boys. We chose Danny Warfel, who also played for Florida and was a strong Christian, is a strong Christian, still is a good role model. We were grateful to have a role model to set him before our boys and say, look at how he is honoring the Lord with the platform God has given him. And that meant a lot to them. And so now we take it very seriously that Timmy has a platform and is a role model for these children that look up to him.
Absolutely. When you look at the big story, obviously you have five children. Your parenting, some people would look at you and say, wow, they must be super parents. Look at their kids. Certainly Timmy is front and center with the platform that the Lord has given him. But the other four kids are doing great as well. Talk to us about being mom and dad.
Well, we're not super parents.
We're not.
There are no, there's only ordinary
sure.
parents, and that's all we are.
That's
we're
right.
just ordinary people that trust God and
exactly right.
and just try to focus our family on the scriptures and lead, you know, raise them up, understanding the Bible and developing character in them, and that's what we were committed to and working at. Worked hard at it. It's hard work. Parenting's not easy, but God is gracious and He gives grace to us and helps us because we fall short, real short.
That's true, and that, you know, there are no perfect parents.
That's exactly right. We didn't always achieve our goals, but we aimed them toward a target that was more than just graduating from college or getting a job or getting married, but to live a significant life and have eternal values and character and work ethic, all those things that Scripture says is important. So we had goals. We had targets.
Again, that is Tim Tebow's mom and dad talking about with Bob at Focus on the Family about the birth of Tim, not even attached to the placebo. Wow. Or the placenta. Placenta. How do I say that? Okay, you guys forgive me out there, don't you? That's what I love about being a Christian. We can forgive each other for our inaccuracies or mistakes we made. Bob Tebow, he and his wife are here in Jacksonville. Their ministry is actually in the Philippines. They've done it for many years, but they've lived most of their life. Tim raised here in Jacksonville as well, University of Florida, now in a baseball career for the New York Mets. It's going to be interesting to see how that turns out if he gets to the majors and all of that. So we've been talking again. People have been saying that Tim Tebow could be an evangelist. He could be a politician. He could follow in the footsteps of a Billy Graham type of individual and actually have crusades and do events like that because he is more accepted than the average Christian. Obviously, he's in your face with his Christianity, but he smiles with it. He talks friendly. He's an athlete, you know, which gives him more credibility. He has all kinds of abilities, prays for people, even at a baseball game. We had that short story on the first one. We kicked off with a young man that had a seizure, and he took time to pray for him, and he got better, which was good. Maybe God has a plan of healing. God has a plan of restoration for all of us. So here is Penix singing, Mary, Did You Know? We'll be back shortly. We got to take a break, catch up on news and such.
Would save our sons and daughters. Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new?
Going south on the Fuller Warren Bridge, there is a broken down car causing backup. 295 going north at Bay Meadows. We're looking at an accident that has at least three cars involved. The left lane is blocked. And 95 south starting at the Fuller Warren Bridge, there's backup all the way down to Emerson. Clear tonight with an overnight low of 43 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 64.
Baby boy, would one day walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby...
That's such a good song, isn't it, for us right now? We're talking about Tim Tebow's, the theme of today's show. All the amazing experiences he's had, what a Christian he is, evangelist, and that kind of stuff, but... Mary, did you know the baby you would have? Of course, they were talking about Jesus in the song, but anyway, we had played earlier episode with the Focus on the Family about Bob and his wife and how she, the doctors wanted her to abort the child, but it didn't happen because God had a plan for Tim to be born. So we're sponsored today by Sun Tire. We thank Dick Erickson, and they have 11 stores, and they check tires for free, fix flats for free, that kind of thing. But he has an amazing testimony that we've used pieces of, and this is one of our favorites. This is the Lord. Listen to this amazing
story.
Second
thing that happened in Vietnam, we were awakened. My grammar, it took me three times to get through English 101. we were up at Khe Sanh. Some of you have heard of that. And we were up there for about a three-day stint, supporting our troops up there. And we got a call in the middle of the night to come over to the ready room. And they had captured a North Vietnamese who was wounded. And they said, we got to get him down to Wei Phu Bai, the imperial capital, where there's a big hospital down there. And we need him down there now. Well, we refused the mission because what they wanted us to do is fly over a mountain range. And these were single-engine aircraft. And I don't know if we got any pilots in here. But you don't get a lot of fun flying in the middle of the night over mountains with one engine. It's not something you want to do. And so we declined the mission. Well, the general got on the line, and guess what? We picked him up and we went down and we took him to the hospital. Well, the part of the story I'm coming to, we got down there, the quickest way was over the mountain range. There was other ways down there, but it'd take us much longer. So we went over there, dropped him off. He was alive when we when we got him there. So I had to take a safe route back. Came back up on Highway 1 again and took a left turn at Long Valley. I remember this valley very well. Right across from the Long Valley was the mountain range there, was our home spot. And our name of our helicopter group was called Millpoint. We're an HMM 361. Jimmy Citrano flew in the same group a little after I did. So anyhow, we're trying to call them because we have some aircraft down in Quezon and we need some parts for it. We want the group tomorrow to bring up these parts. So we're and the static was as bad as you could possibly get. We couldn't, you know, and we didn't know if they're hearing us. And all of a sudden, there was no static. And a voice came up and it said, "This is the Lord. I will relay for you." There was absolute silence for 20 minutes. We flew from there to Quezon. No one got on the intercom. No one got on the radio. Was it the Lord? I believe it still puts goosebumps through me. There was no static. You know, people say, "Has the Lord spoken to you?" Well, I want to tell you something. That was the most piercing voice I'd ever heard in my life. It was very simple. So that was my second Vietnam story. Quite a story for me. It also, once again, John?
What did he say again? "This is the Lord."
"This is the Lord. I will relay for you." See, we were trying, we couldn't get them to respond to us, our home base. So he was going to relay for our message. Okay. The problem, he scared us so bad that we couldn't talk. It was unreal. It was I never had an experience quite like that ever since. So he dealt with me in a couple times in Vietnam. Didn't get me back in church, but I knew he was there. I knew he was there. He's not giving up.
Again, that's Dick Erickson, Sun Tire. We thank you for his sponsorship. Tim Tebow, we're talking about him today. We got a story here, him speaking of the Prison Fellowship. The incredible story of John 3:16, which many people have heard, but 94 million Googled. And then a story with Skip Bayless, which is another interesting interview. He's one of the hosts on the ESPN network and commentators out of Dallas. Works at the newspaper as well. But anyway, we're talking about Tim Tebow and his incredible ministry and effect on America. Listen to what he has to say in a prison fellowship meeting.
"And for all you Alabama fans, man, aren't you glad that we're sinners saved by grace, huh? Well, I know that y'all are outstanding and you probably want to mingle, so I'm not going to talk long. I'll just share, a quick testimony, a little bit about what I'm doing and what I've done in college and kind of what my plans are. Actually, a few days ago, we just launched the Tim Tebow Foundation.org, and in that, there are four main things. The first thing is a nonprofit called First and 15 is what we're doing locally in the state of Florida, just making a difference in young people's lives. Last year, we were able to raise over $500,000 for orphanages around the world and trying to make a difference in their life. The second thing is A Brighter Day. It's something else that we started that, is one of my favorites, and that's where we take kids all around the world, and we take them to Disney World. We take them to do fun things. We just make a difference in their life, and we don't say, we didn't have a title like Dreams Come True, because we can't make the dreams come true for the kids, but we can give them a brighter day, and we can put a smile on their faces, and so that's the second thing that we're doing. And then the last two things are very special to me is, the third thing is the Uncle Dick's Home, an orphanage in the Philippines that I'm working hand-in-hand with to try to help those kids just in everything they do. And then the fourth thing is what I want to share a little bit about, and that's my prison ministry. And that's something that's very near and dear to my heart. The first time that I ever was in a prison was when I was 15 years old, and my brother Peter, who's here today, was preaching in this prison. And we were in the Philippines, and you walk in this prison, and literally the warden was telling us, there's everybody here. There's the biggest drug dealers. There's, murderers. There's rapists. There's everybody in here. And, there in the Philippines is a lot different than the prison site. Here, you just walk in. and you're in the middle of the prison and all the inmates are just standing there with you. And they're just shaking your hands and just talking to you. And so we're just sitting there. I'm listening to my brother preach. And he's preaching about how Jesus, you know, y'all think y'all are so bad. And, you know, the world says y'all are awful. Well, Jesus didn't even die for you. He died for me. Because there's enough sin in my life and in my heart that Jesus died for me. And I was thinking, I was just, wow, it was powerful. And from that point on, I've been sold about doing prison ministry. And from that point on, I've probably preached in 20 prisons. You know, a lot in the state of Florida over the last 3 years. I've actually had the opportunity to preach in death row. And this summer, I preached in two death rows. And it took me 2 days because I went, you know, to each guy's, you know, stall. And I went in the first one. And there are 342 guys. And I went one by one by one and talked to all of them. And you know what? Most of them, they didn't want to hear. You know, I even got to some of them. They said, you know what? I'm too busy. I'm too busy to listen to you. They're in death row, but they're too busy to listen to me. You know, most of them, they would have some excuse of why they couldn't, or they would try to intimidate me somehow. But you know, out of those 342, two of them came to know their Jesus as their Lord and Savior. And so it did make a difference. You know, a lot of you probably know me as a football player and someone who gets very intense and very passionate about what I do and playing football on the field. If you've ever been with me in a prison, you know that it's 10 times more. I'm so passionate about sharing in prisons and sharing with inmates. And I think that's something that God has given me. And that's because I can translate that from the football field. When I walk into a prison, all these inmates and all these people that they would recognize themselves as hard. They're hard guys. You know, they you know, my dad or a lot of other people can go in there, chaplains, and they don't listen to them. They don't care. That's another preacher coming in here to share with them. But you know, when I walk in there, there's that football player. There's that runner, that hard dude. He's coming in here to preach with them. He's coming in here to share with me. So they all get around, and you hear the guys, they're bickering and stuff, and the Florida fans and the Florida State fans and the Miami fans and the Tennessee fans. But by the end of it, there's either a fight, there's an argument, the guards have to break it up because that's how much they care about it. And so then they have a choice to come listen to you if you want because you're just in the yard preaching to them. And so, you know, most of the time, all of them come, at least 90%. And they'll sit there, and the guys who really care, they'll make the rest of the guys, they'll be like, stop doing push-ups, stop playing basketball, come over here and listen to them. And so they'll all sit there and they'll listen to me. And I have an opportunity to share my faith with these guys just because I play the game of football. And I believe that's why Jesus has given me the platform to play football. And that's what I want to do with the rest of my life is not play football. Football is a means to an end for me. But sharing the love of Christ, that is the end. That is what it's all about. So you can share with these inmates about how, you know what? I have what a lot of you want. I do. I have what you want. Famous. There's people that like me. You know, I'm going to be able to make money. I have success, 2 national championships and a Heisman. You want that. But what you want more than that is you want to know when you die that you're going to spend eternity in heaven. And you don't know that right now. You say, you might be in here the rest of your life. You might be in prison for the rest of your life. But I'm going to tell you how you can be free inside. You know, because your time here on earth is very, very short. Your time in eternity is forever. Do you know where you're spending eternity? And you'll just see those inmates who they wouldn't even want to talk about anything like that. But then after you say that to them, they'll start crying. They'll start weeping because they know they're spending the rest of their life in prison. And they want to know how they can have hope. So we have found so much more success in people coming to know the Lord in prison than any time I've ever spoken out of prison. Because they're ready and they're needy of a Savior. They're needing a reason to have hope. And that's why something like prison fellowship is unbelievable. Because it's giving guys that are ready the opportunity to trust Christ.
That is so powerful. The fruit of the Spirit is love, peace, and joy. We all have a spirit, a body, soul, and a spirit. If you don't feed the Spirit, it's not going to go anywhere, but it can be alive with Christ in you. You can be in the prison the rest of your life, but God can still use you in prison. He can still love you. He can still minister to you. You can still worship you. You can still care about Him. You can find your love, peace, and joy in Him, through Him. That's so powerful. That was a great testimony, really. guy, Tim Tebow, we're talking about today. He's using his witness for Christ to continue to spread the gospel. He is a man of God, determined. Mom and dad did not abort him, thank God. It's different than what the doctors told him. They prayed him to health. And wow, did God do a good job with him. He's amazing playing baseball right now. All right, Tim Tebow shares this incredible story of playing football and the whole thing about John 3:16, which he put on his face, you know, to block the sun. These little black things that players put on their faces really to block the reflection from the sun or even lights if they're playing at nighttime. And so he put Philippians on the first time. Then he changed it to John 3:16. Listen to this story. Incredible.
You know, there's been so many times in my life where I felt unworthy or unqualified, but God would just do something so cool in the midst of it. And one of those times was when I was a junior at the University of Florida, and we're getting ready to play Tennessee. And I see some of my teammates putting different eye blacks under their eyes, and they're putting like their mom's name or their area code under their eyes. And so I start to think, you know, I wonder if I could put something under my eyes that maybe could encourage someone or inspire someone. So I was like, well, God bless, I don't know. And then I was like, well, Philippians 4:13, I could do that. You know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I was like, that'll be good for a football player. So I put it under my eyes. We were blessed to win because it was Tennessee. And it really wasn't that big of a deal. After the game, a couple of local newspapers wrote about it, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But I kept wearing it under my eyes every single game. And as probably a lot of you know, Gator fans are very passionate. So 4, 5, 6 weeks later, they're selling it at the Gator bookstore, at the Florida library. You have thousands of fans showing up to games wearing Philippians 4:13 under their eyes. And I honestly believe half of them don't even know what it means. I had one guy, his name was Phil, come up to me and said, "Hey, did you wear that under your eyes for me?" I was like, "No, it's a Bible verse." What are you talking about? And so we get to the SEC championship game at the end of the year, and we're getting ready to run out of the tunnel. And football's kind of one of those things where you have such tunnel vision. It's just one thing at a time, one thing at a time. And as I was getting ready to run out of the tunnel, I really felt like God was putting in my heart to change the verse. I was like, really, right now? But I realized that if we won, we'd be playing a national championship on one of the biggest stages that I might ever get. And so that would be the right opportunity to change the verse. And so we were blessed to win that game. And the next six weeks leading up to national championship, I was agonizing and really contemplating what verse I was going to go with. And God kept bringing it to my heart and my head, John 3:16, because it's the essence of our Christianity. It's the essence of our hope. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. It's what gives us hope as Christians. So I decided to go with that. And so 2 days before the game, I went up to my parents' hotel room in Miami, Florida, and I was like, "Mom, Dad, I've decided to change the verse. I'm going to go with John 3:16. My mom's super sweet and supportive. "Oh, that's great, honey." My dad's like, "Well, have you told Coach Meyer?" Because he says he just likes his routines, but that dude is so superstitious, it's ridiculous. So he's like, "You really need to tell him." So we were right down the street at FAU practicing. We finished our last practice for a national championship. I said, "Hey, Coach Meyer, can I talk to you for a second?" He's like, "Yeah, how you feeling? Your arm good? Leg good? You ready for the game?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. You know the verse I wear in my eyes?" He's like, "Yeah, Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ strengthens me. I love it." I was like, "Well, I'm going to change that verse tomorrow night." "What? What are you talking about? You can't change that verse. That verse got us here." Didn't get us here. So after a couple minutes of explaining it to him, he totally was supportive and understood. And honestly, after that, I didn't even really think about it. I just went out there and tried to win the championship game. We were blessed to win. And 2 days later, I was at Ballyhoo Restaurant in Gainesville, Florida, with me, my mom, my dad, my aunt, and Coach Meyer. And probably some of you have been to Ballyhoo's. And I was just sitting there eating a grouper. And Coach Meyer gets a call. And he's like, "All right, bye." And I was like, "Who is that?" He said, "That was Steve McClain. Here's our PR guy at Florida." So what do you have to say? He said, "Did you know that during that game, 94 million people Googled John 3:16? And honestly, my first thought was, how the heck do 94 million people not know John 3:16? Hashtag Sunday school. It's like the first thing you hear, you know? But I was just sitting in Ballyhoo Restaurant, just so humbled at how big the God is that we serve and how he wants to do amazing things in us and through us. And when we just step out and show a little faith or a little courage, or we just decide, hey, it's okay to be a little bit different than everybody else, what God can do in our lives. And That game just happened to be in 2009, January 8th. Well, exactly 3 years later, January 8th, 2012, we just happened to be playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I never even thought about John 3:16 one time, so I can't take any credit for it. I just tried to go out there and win a playoff game, and we were blessed to win this crazy playoff game in overtime. And I run in and try to, you know, shower really quick and change because I wanted to go celebrate my family. So I'm running to go and do my press conference really quick because I love talking to the media. And right before I walk into the press conference room, Patrick, our PR guy, jumps in front of me. He says, "Timmy, do you realize what happened?" I was like, "Yeah, we just beat the Steelers. We're going to play the Patriots. Like, let me do this." He's like, "No, do you realize what happened?" I was like, "I guess not." He said, "Timmy, it's exactly three years from the night you wore John 3:16 under your eyes." I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And he was like, "No, you don't realize. During the game, you threw for 316 yards. Your yards per completion were 31.6. Your yards per rush were 3.16. The ratings for the night were 31.6, and the time of possession was 31.06. And during the game, 90 million people Googled John 3:16, and it's the number one trending thing on every platform." I was just standing there in that hallway getting ready to do this press conference thinking that that night was about a football game. And it really wasn't, because the God that we serve is such a big God. And standing in that hallway, I knew that it was something so much more. Because the God that we serve is a God of miracles, as we're going to hear today. And it's a God that does pretty amazing things in us and through us. And I think we just have to be willing to step out and say, "Here you go, God. I'm going to give you my fish and my loaves of bread and watch what he does with it." But the God we serve can do pretty awesome, amazing things.
That is pretty awesome. That's pretty amazing. John 3:16. Well, guess what, folks? That's why we call this show Inspiration 3:16, because of John 3:16. Because for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, whoever believes in him shall have everlasting life. God is a purpose in inspiring us because he wants a personal relationship with us. As Tim Tebow said, we're featuring Tim Tebow today. Amazing story. That one was an interview at a church, actually. And now we've got another interview with him with Skip Bayless. Now, Skip Bayless is a pretty critical sports writer. He says he's a Christian. You know, he's probably a religious Christian. He goes to church on Sunday, Christmas and Easter, maybe more often. But he doesn't understand the personal relationship that Tim is talking about. So listen into this interview.
Many times on our show, I defended you against critics who, during that run, finally threw up their hands and said, "It's divine intervention. It's all God's will." It led to, I think you saw the Saturday Night Live skit in which there was actually God telling you in the locker room, "Tim, it's all me. I did this whole thing." So help me out on this. I do share your faith. Don't pretend to be as faithful as you are. But I wonder about this. How much of a role does God play in winning or losing a football game?
That's a good question. I think for me, when I'm praying before games and during games, and when I get on a knee and what's become T-Bowen, is, you know, I'm asking the Lord for strength, whether I win, whether I lose.
I heard you when you're mic'd up.
Whether I'm a hero or the GOAT,
okay,
I'm still going to be the same person. I'm going to treat others the way I want to be treated. I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to do what's right. And regardless, I'm going to give him the glory. And part of taking a knee is humbling yourself, and it's a form of showing humility where you're putting someone else first and putting the Lord first, and that's why I do it. And more than anything, more than asking for wins or losses, I'm asking that I have a platform to honor him.
Yet it was reported the day after the Bears game in the Denver Post that you told a teammate during the game, I think it was Woodyard, that God told you you were going to win that game?
I didn't specifically tell that to him, but, you know, there's different times when, you know, I walk up to players and, you know, just say, you know, "Let's just go out there and give everything we have and let's honor the
Lord. But that didn't happen.
And God's going to do something great, you know? And because regardless, that doesn't mean win or lose. And, you know, I've never predicted a game because I don't know. And But, you know, I do know that if we go out there in honor of the Lord, then ultimately it's bigger than a win or a loss.
So, bottom line, you don't think God decides football games?
You know, I think God's involved in every aspect of our life.
Is it beyond you to know?
It's absolutely beyond me to know. I think God's in every aspect of our life, regardless. And I think the greatest thing is if we're honoring Him with what we do.
Okay, because clearly if you're playing against a rival quarterback who's as faithful as you are,
absolutely.
Who knows, yeah. Right? Would God choose him over you? I don't think so. Do you?
Well, you don't know. I mean, whether it's you know, part of God's plan to lose the game, win the game, it doesn't matter, just as long as we honor him. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, for me to understand is God's plan doesn't always mean it's going to be great or it's going to be easy.
Exactly.
Or the
well
life's
said.
Going to be easy. It just means that honoring him is always the best way. It doesn't mean it's, you know, the most famous way or the most fun way, but it always is going to end up being the best.
Do you believe your faith is the biggest reason you are such an astonishingly polarizing figure, a divisive figure in this country? Everybody has a strong opinion, love him or hate him, on Tim Tebow.
I'm sure my faith is part of that. You know, I know I have a lot of supporters because of it, which I'm very thankful for, and I'm very thankful for all the support that I've received and the people that are praying for me, that are backing me, that I get the nice letters from, and you know, I really appreciate it. That support definitely means a lot. And you know, on the other side, the motivation definitely fuels me. And you know, you're always going to have critics. I've always had them, and I'll always have them for the future. And for me, you know, I always use that as motivation. But more than anything, the support is what drives me the most.
So would you break it down? Is it more your faith or more the way you play, which is often not so great for a while, and then when it's time, really great, which baffles, it mystifies people, it torments people?
Well, I think definitely my faith plays a role in that, but you know, more than anything, it's just, you know, going out there and trying to play and honor the Lord with how I play the game and with how I handle myself and with how I treat people, and regardless, win or lose, or how I play.
So being that guy, that polarizing figure, doesn't really bother you?
Well, you know, being a polarizing figure has pros and cons. You know, and I'm very relaxed, laid back, low-key person that likes to do a lot of normal things and not very extravagant at all. And so it does make hanging out with my brothers and, you know, my friends and family a little bit harder, which can sometimes be frustrating, to be honest. But at the same time, the pros so outweigh the cons because, you know, I'm part of building a hospital in the Philippines. And we're building 17 Timmy's playrooms, you know, 6 of them in third world countries and 11 of them here in the States. And we have the opportunity to bring in Dreams Come True kids every single game, you know, and, you know, have an opportunity to spend a day with Joy Norris, who I met on Twitter because he said T-boying, Joaquimoing. And that's ultimately worth it because we play a game that at the end of the day is a game, and it doesn't matter whether you win, whether you lose. Yes, we're super passionate about it. A lot of people care about it, but it's how you handle yourself. And for me, it's about using a platform that God has given me, because it doesn't matter how many games I win or how many touchdowns I score. If I don't use a platform to influence people's lives, then I believe it's wasted. But I believe if I take the opportunity to use my platform and be a great example, you know, be a great example for the next generation, be someone that a mom or a dad can look to their son and say, you know, there's someone that's trying to do it the right way. There's someone that's trying to live with character, strength, and honor, and do what's right, do what's best, and treat others the way he wants to be treated. Then ultimately, that's worth it, because then I believe I'm having a life of significance and meaning because I'm affecting other people's lives in a positive example.
Again, that's Tim Tebow with Skip Bayless. Today's show has been featuring Tim Tebow. We've had several little outtakes of his stories, and even his mom and dad talking about how they could have aborted him and decided not to. God had a purpose for him. And he talked about saying, asking for the platform. God gives him the platform. He's not maybe the best athlete out there, but he's good. He's good, but he's outstanding individual, character, strength, relationship with the Lord. That's what he's talking about. He's not polarizing, I don't believe. He's actually drawing people to him. Thanks for listening. John Beener with Inspiration 316. We'll see you again tomorrow. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 show with John Beener. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book, visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.